Phil Hayes Show.
Hello there and welcome to the show, which is brought to you by The Athletic and The Square Ball. My name is Dan Moylan. Hello. And from The Athletic, remotely today, it's Phil Hay.
Yes, back in lockdown. Hello.
And from The Square Ball, Michael Normanson.
Hello.
Right now, if you want to subscribe to The Athletic, there is a special New Year's discount in place, $3.99 a month if you want to get your teeth into that. And what can we look forward to on The Athletic this week, Phil?
What have I got? There's a piece coming up on the 23s and the sort of close relationship between them and the first team at Leeds, which is quite unusual at Premier League level and particularly relevant given that the Crawley game is coming around on Sunday. And we've also got coming up next week an interview with Romário Vieira, the lesser known of the two Vieiras, but a lot of very interesting stuff in that piece. So that'll be around sort of Tuesday, Wednesday time.
More on the 23s in due course, but if you want to get signed up to The Athletic and read all that stuff by Phil, head to theathletic.com/LeedsPods. Of course, you get all the ad-free versions of our podcasts too. That's theathletic.com/LeedsPod. To the New Year's football, and I wanted to call it White Hart Lane, but it's not White Hart Lane, is it? It's the posher version of White Hart Lane. I don't know if the cheese room ever did get built in the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium, and Phil, you weren't down there to find out, I'd believe, were you?
No, I wasn't. I was remotely for that. I think if you promise a cheese room, you've got to deliver one, haven't you? I'm pretty sure they came up with one at Manchester City when they redid the Emirates. And I don't doubt that when the West End gets gutted at Elland Road, it'll be right at the top of the list, won't it? You've got to have a cheese room.
The Beast and Fromagerie. Can't wait to experience that. It's going to be amazing.
Dairy triangles all round.
Two Spurs and the actual football itself. And they were annoyingly efficient, weren't they? A game that we didn't want to start the new year like that, but we almost have to take defeats like this on the chin.
I don't think any of us three felt particularly confident about it when we were talking last week. And we do a match day discussion that starts well before kickoff and carries on until a couple of hours afterwards as well. And the general feeling on there seemed to be that there was a chance, because there's always a chance if Leeds play well. But actually, on balance of probability, they're strong at the back, Spurs. They don't give an awful lot away. And they've got Kane and Son, who are going to score goals, are going to cause problems, and are two of the best players by a mile in the league. So I sort of got the sense that people were crossing their fingers, hoping for the best, but weren't anticipating an awful lot from that game. And I didn't either, to be honest. They are a very good side, Spurs. Like so many teams at that level of the league, they're pretty settled. They've got years and years of experience and nous to lean on, and they know what they're doing. And it was always going to be a case, a little bit like Old Trafford, a case of whether Leeds attacking, Leeds dominating and controlling possession was going to break Spurs at the back, or whether it was going to hit a bit of a brick wall, or whether chances were going to go begging and Spurs were going to pick Leeds off. And that's what happened in the end. And the first goal was soft. It was a mess. It was a mistake. But to my mind, that really set the tone for the whole day. What had been a pretty balanced and even contest up until that point turned on that penalty. Spurs got themselves ahead. And I didn't think from that point onwards they looked like letting it go.
For me, it's a very clear demonstration of something we're seeing now as we've spent nearly half a season in the Premier League. It's leagues within leagues, in my opinion there. Your opinion on the penalty, Phil, yes or no?
I thought it was, although it was very borderline, and I can see why there was so much confusion about it. It was a case of where, again, it was interpretation involved. Where was the critical contact between Alioski and Bergwijn? It looked initially, and if you stop the slow-mo in the right position from a Leeds point of view, it looked as if Alioski's boot went through, the back of the boot in front of him outside of the box. But actually, the sort of thigh-to-thigh, leg-to-leg contact, which seemed to commit the foul, I think probably, if we're being fair and being neutral, was on the line or just about on the line. There was a bit of benefit of the doubt needed. But it was without question, it was a foul. That wasn't in dispute. It was all about the position of it. But the more I looked at it, and the more I studied it, particularly after the game, I thought that, yeah, it probably was the right decision.
You could argue the game turned on that moment, but it's quite telling, I think, that we haven't really clung on to it as the turning point of the game. Overall, we kind of just had to suck it all up in that way that we did, particularly with the second goal, which was just an incredibly good bit of Premier League football, annoyingly so.
Well, that's that's the difference, really. You were talking about leagues and leagues, and I agree with that. I think it feels this season as if it's taken far longer for the division to break up into the individual leagues that you get. So your bottom section, your middle half, and then your top end as well. There's a kind of a lot of cobwebs and a lot of strain on a lot of squads, which means that performances haven't been exceptional. You haven't seen anything like the form from Liverpool or the confidence from Liverpool that you had last season. It's taken City a while to get going as well. But you have a kind of level of class in players like Son and Kane that you just don't have at Leeds at the moment, which is not a criticism and is not a slight. It just, again, makes the point that it's going to take a while to catch up. It's going to take a lot of investment for Leeds to start bridging that gap. And, you know, that was a really, really clinical moment. The first goal was an out-and-out mistake. It was, you know, Meslier's pass that kind of fell betwixt in between Phillips and Luke Ayling and ran to Harry Winks. And you get a few of them from Meslier, and we can maybe come on to talking about him, because there was naturally a bit of discussion about his age and his inexperience after that. But it's the risk you take playing as Bielsa wants to play, and, you know, that is going to happen from time to time. The second goal, it wasn't quite impossible to defend. And I think if you want to be hypercritical, you can see it's Son getting in between the two centre-backs and think that one of them should have had him marked. But the speed of his run and the intelligence of his run, and, you know, the way that Kane puts it on a plate and Son finishes it, you know, that is really top-level Premier League football. And that, you know, that is what you're going to come up against from time to time. And that certainly killed the game. But as I say, I didn't think there was going to be a way back into it at 1-0, because you knew then that Spurs had the game that they wanted and were going to be able to, without controlling the ball and controlling possession, were going to be able to dictate things.
And on the third goal, that header, Meslier falling back behind his line with the ball, it's not the first time we've seen that this season. Let's talk about him and his form and these mistakes that are present in his game, because there is an argument, and I am simply playing devil's advocate here, fully aware that we're likely to see Kiko Kasia at the weekend. If he was making these mistakes, do you think he'd be getting more pelters than Meslier is? Or is context important?
I think he probably would be, although I think the context to that is the fact that Kasia's been here and involved in the first team for a lot longer. He's vastly more experienced than Meslier. He's also a lot more expensive and came with a much bigger profile. He has the background of Espanyol, Real Madrid. Meslier has no, you know, top flight experience prior to this season. So you're talking about very different keepers at very different stages of their career. I guess I'd be interested to know from you two whether or not you have any concerns about Meslier and the team. Before I sort of talk about him and where he's at, is there any thought in your head that he needs taken out of the team, or any thought that the mistakes he's making versus the better parts of his play are in any way a concern?
Because of his age, not really, to be honest. I'm perfectly happy to stick with him this season, particularly in a season where it looks like we are probably going to finish somewhere in the middle. I think in some ways it's a good time for him to be making these mistakes. If we were down in the bottom three or right up at the top, sort of jostling for Europe, I'd think it feels like those mistakes cost you, whereas I feel like at the moment I'm happy for him to be getting the experience.
Yeah, I tend to agree with that. I think when you place it against the wider context, the season as a whole, we can afford to have one or two lapses like that. You know, I'm not going to pretend I don't watch it and think we need to do better there. The keeper needs to do better. We could probably do with a better keeper under those circumstances, but it doesn't feel at the minute like there's a huge amount at stake. We're doing enough to be where we are, and the mistakes are not costing us to any great degree, I don't think.
And he's incredibly young. I mean, he's young for a reserve goalkeeper, never mind a first choice. I think if you look along the benches, you won't see many 20-year-olds on there. So for him to be in the first team and doing as well as he is doing, because I think he's done an awful lot of good things as well this season. Well, he has got away with a few dubious passes, and there's been a couple of occasions he's been behind his line. He's also pulled off some great saves, and I think in recent games he's been dominating his box relatively well as well on set pieces.
Yeah, I think that's right. And you were saying earlier about, you know, this being a good season to blood him in. It's turning out to be a very good season for that, because it does look like Leeds are well on the way to being safe, and they're going to have a really poor second half of the season if they're going to get sucked in. And because of that, it kind of compensates for inexperience. It compensates for any errors. And it's a really good opportunity to push on a keeper who is a France youth international, does seem to have masses of potential. In terms of his age, we were chatting about this at the Athletic before the game at Spurs, and somebody was saying to me, he does seem exceptionally young. You know, it's not that you don't get young keepers out in the game. But in Premier League terms, it feels really unusual. So we had a look back right through, you know, Premier League history back to 92. And granted, football goes back further than that. But these were the stats that Opta were able to provide us. And if he plays every game, starts every game now before his 21st birthday in March, then he's going to set a record for the most starts in a single season made by a keeper under the age of 21. The record's held by Paul Gerrard, who was at Oldham at the time. He made 25 starts, and that goes back to the 92-93 season. And you need to go back to Joe Hart in 2007-08 to find the last keeper who made as many starts at that age as Meslier is on to make. And also across Europe, I mean, we asked Opta to have a look at the, you know, your top five Euro leagues. So the Premier League and Serie A, La Liga, Ligue 1 in France and the Bundesliga. And amongst keepers with 10 and or more starts this season, Meslier is the youngest. You know, he's the only one who's under the age of 21, the only one who's still to reach his 21st birthday. So they're very much breaking the mould at Leeds and breaking from convention by doing this. And I think it's a good example of how confident Bielsa is in him. I think the fact that, you know, he was asked on Saturday what he made of the mistake, and he was quite quick to say, I suspect you're implying that there's a bigger issue here or a bigger problem, you know, that perhaps he shouldn't be in goal. And he was trying to say, Bielsa, you know, in general, if you look at his performances over the course of the season, they've been very good and they justify his inclusion, they justify his selection. And, you know, I think Bielsa will accept the mistakes to a point because he knows how difficult he makes it for his goalkeepers. There's a lot to ask from them with distribution, long and short. It needs to be very accurate. They're constantly on the ball and they can't just hide in the box and, you know, pull off a few saves from here to there and you know, kind of look fancy when they get the chance. It's they're very much an 11th outfield player when Leeds are on the ball. The one thing that I think Leeds can do and need to change, not necessarily in this window, but moving forward, is to increase the competition behind him. You know, it feels to me like Casilla is a bit of a busted flush at Leeds, in part because of the racism charge and the ban that he served, but in part because his form has been very mixed and very mediocre for somebody who was, you know, by a mile, the most expensive player in the squad. I say by a mile, I mean a long way clear of a lot of players at Leeds in the Championship and still on a, you know, hefty wage of over 30, 35 grand a week. I don't feel as if Casilla in the background longer term is going to be enough of a threat to Meslier. And I think it would be beneficial to have somebody else there who was knocking on the door a bit more intently. But for now, I'm happy with the setup. I think it's a good opportunity to let Meslier develop. And you just get the feeling that if he does develop in the right way, and if he does keep progressing, for the £5 million that they spent to sign him from Lorient, you know, over a period of 5-10 years, perhaps longer, he could turn out to be a fantastic investment for that price.
Just to go back to last season, he obviously was given his chance in the first team because of the Kiko incident. Do you think we would have tried to sign him anyway? Or do you get the impression the club would have not been as committed to the £5 million without having a proper look at him first?
I think they'd have done that deal regardless, although that might have been influenced by whether or not they'd gone up. You know, had they stayed in the Championship, they'd have had to have made some, you know, some really serious decisions about where they were going to spend money. I mean, to be perfectly honest, they would have to have made serious decisions right across the board in terms of Bielsa, players they were going to try and keep. I think it was inevitable that Phillips would have been sold. I don't think they could have asked for another season from him. But, you know, they were obviously, and, you know, COVID affected this, but they were obviously looking at an option for Jack Harrison, which at that point was set at £8 million. Meslier for about £5 million. It's a lot of money for a Championship club. I think in terms of his talent and his ability, they would have quite happily kept him, regardless of whether he played in place of Casilla. But it was always quite telling for me that in, you know, the last January transfer window, Leeds were well aware of what Casilla was going to be looking at if he was found guilty of the racism charge. They knew it was going to be a minimum of 6 games, but potentially more, which at a critical period of a promotion season is when you want your keeper in place and in play. But there was no move at all to get anybody else in the January window. Bielsa was quite happy with what he had, and his attitude was simply, if Casilla gets banned, I'll play Meslier. You know, he'll come into the team and he'll play for as long as he needs to. And in the end, he's never lost his place since. I know Casilla played against Derby in that dead rubber back in July and also in the League Cup against Hull City earlier this season, but it's never ever felt as if there was much of a threat to Melier. It feels as if his position is very solid and very tight in the starting lineup at the moment. I think they were always keen to make the investment. I think that, as I say, the thing that would have influenced it would have been league status. But in their eyes, they felt from the start that the option they'd agreed with Lorient was really good value for somebody with bags of talent.
Broadening the discussion out to the defence as a whole, I mean, this is a bit of an obvious question, really, but do you think we're missing a little bit of continuity in there, given that we've got so many first-choice centre-backs on the treatment table?
It's got to make a difference. It does involve constant reshuffling. So as much as I think actually Ayling has probably had his best games at centre-back this season, he is a right-back, and Bielsa tried to make that point when he was asked about Ayling at centre-back. You know, he said, yeah, he's played well there, but, you know, he is a very, very competent right-back. And I think playing there consistently in over 15, 16 games helps you to get into your flow. And in the same way as I think, you know, Robin Koch, he seemed to improve with time in the defence. I think it definitely helps to develop an understanding with somebody like Liam Cooper if you're in the team for a good while. And again, at left-back, there's had to be a little bit of chopping and changing between Alioski and Dallas, because from time to time, Dallas is needed over at right back, and you know these changes have to be made. I mean, I think in reality, even with a first choice defence, I suspect Leeds would still be quite leaky because of the way they're playing and because of the quality that they're up against. But I think I always feel that the defensive record, which is what 33 goals conceded now, you have to make the mitigation of the fact that there are a lot of defenders out, that you've got Llorente, who's a Spain international, who we've barely seen so far and is still injured at this stage. And, you know, minus those options, it becomes difficult to tighten things up. It becomes difficult to find any kind of solidity or continuity at the back. So I don't think it would be a silver bullet in terms of, for example, solving set pieces or making Leeds ultra tight, but I certainly think it would help.
Just on the defence, actually, there were links yesterday with Tomori at Chelsea. Is that just speculation, do you think? It seems odd that we'd go from having essentially one centre-back to four all of a sudden.
It seems to be. I mean, Leeds kind of inquired about Tomori back in the summer, but it was more of a speculative ask about, you know, what his situation was, whether he was available, you know, all of that. They didn't really get into serious discussions about a deal. I don't think Bielsa did any real close-up analysis of him, because they were obviously after Ben White to begin with. They had Robin Koch in the background as well, who was always going to be the fallback if White didn't happen, as in the end was the case. And Llorente, it very much felt as if the shift towards signing a second centre-back came after the League Cup game against Hull City, which, from what I understand, I think Leeds were a bit disappointed by that game, to say the least. I think Bielsa expected more of his side, and there were discussions afterwards in which it was agreed that it would make sense to bring in somebody else, and it would make sense to have a little bit more depth rather than to be relying too heavily on academy players who hadn't played yet. I think the feeling was that it was just a bit more insurance having somebody like Llorente than, for example, you know, turning instantly to Ollie Casey or Charlie Creswell. Creswell in particular, really well thought of in the academy, but obviously very, very raw, and Leeds moving into a higher division, it just seemed to be more sensible to go for somebody else with a bit more nous. As it turns out, Llorente has hardly been able to play. He missed most of the season so far. But in terms of Tomori, I mean, Bielsa said about centre-backs after these injuries came up, the one to Cooper at Manchester United, he said, look, I'll work with what I've got. We've got academy players. We've got Phillips who can play there. We've got Ayling who can play there. You kind of feel that he'd give Kessié a bash there or try and make the best of him if he needed to, because it just seems to be his way. And that doesn't seem to have changed. There was never a plan to get another centre-back in. From what I'm told, that as at this point hasn't shifted. I think it's likely that the interest in Tomori will come from elsewhere. But they are short on numbers there. There's no question at all. I think, as ever, the way Bielsa sees it is that if he takes Tomori and Cooper recovers and Llorente recovers and then Robin Koch is back fit, and notwithstanding the fact as well that you could have Gaetano Berardi recovered before the end of the season, suddenly he's got far more than he needs, and it leads him back to that old problem and that old concern of his, which is having far too many players around the training ground, many of whom are never going to get a game.
Just returning to Luke Ayling that you mentioned there, and to close out the discussion on Spurs, he was your one to watch up against Harry Kane. How do you think he got on?
sounded like a bit of a Hell in a Cell match, that, didn't it? Ayling v. Kane. It was a difficult afternoon from the point where they conceded. I think Ayling was quite guilty of a lot of stray passes on Saturday. As I say, I think he's done very well at centre-back, but that game was always going to test him. I didn't feel as if it was vintage Kane, in the same way as I didn't feel it was vintage Son, with the exception of the goal, which was outstanding, great finish. But I think all round, you know, Leeds, in the periods where Spurs stretched Leeds or tried to get at them, it was difficult. And I don't think there's any doubt that with a goal and an assist, Kane comes out on top in that one.
Looking for an assist with your credit card but can't get a hold of anyone? Luckily, with 24/7 US-based live customer service from Discover, everyone has the option to talk to a real person anytime, day or night. Yep, you heard that right. You can talk to a real human in customer service at any time. Sounds like a real game changer if you ask us. Make the right call and get the service you deserve with Discover. Limitations apply. See terms at discover.com/creditcard.
This episode is brought to you by Michelob Ultra, the official beer sponsor of the NBA. Want to get closer to the game than ever before? Michelob Ultra Courtside is giving fans the chance to win exclusive NBA prizes and experiences like official gear, courtside seats to an NBA game, and more. Head over to MichelobUltra.com/courtside to learn more.
Before we get into the under-23s and the article that you've written about them, Phil, quick word on transfers. Have we got any sniffs of anything happening? Do you think anything will happen? Because, you know, Angus Kinnear told us when we spoke to him some weeks back that they were expecting a quiet January, but, you know, never say never. Any rumblings on the jungle drums?
The incomings are quiet, and that was what we expected. I never rule out academy signings at Leeds, because they seem to be recruiting on that front all the time. And Dave McGurk, the youngster over at Wigan, again being mentioned, he's somebody that Leeds are still interested in. But I think most of what you're going to see this month will be loans heading out. Tyler Roberts, interesting one, because he is in the picture in the sense that he's been in the squad in the main through the season, hasn't played an awful lot, but has been right on the fringes. But there is a lot of loan interest in him from the Championship, Derby, one of the sides that would like to take him. And I think Bielsa's feeling is that he'd like to keep Roberts, but at the same time, if Roberts wanted to get out and get some games and play more than he's able to at Leeds, he probably wouldn't obstruct that either. And it seems to me like it might be a good idea. It feels like a long time now since Roberts has made a significant impact. I didn't think he was influential, particularly during the Championship run-in, you know, post the COVID shutdown. And it doesn't feel like he's been at the forefront of this in the Premier League either. So that's definitely something to watch as the month goes on. A slight change with Jordan Stevens. He's left his loan at Swindon Town, has been cut short. Understanding is that he'll go to Bradford City for the second half of the season. And we're waiting to see what happens with Ryan Edmondson. His half-season loan at Aberdeen in Scotland is up. He hasn't played a great deal there, but Aberdeen would like to keep him and may try to do so. I think the consideration for Leeds and also for Edmondson and his camp will be whether or not it's worth staying if it doesn't look like he's going to get a huge number of minutes up in Aberdeen. So there's League One and League Two interest in him. He will have other options. But I think in the main, what we see this month will be youngsters going out of the club.
Where does Michael Olise fit into this? The guy at Reading who, as a rumour, it won't go away. Is there any substance to this, do you think?
He's the sort of player that Leeds will be looking at and have an eye on. I mean, you'll remember the links from the summer window with Todd Cantwell at Norwich. Again, that was very much being pushed by Cantwell's camp, but it's not the case that Leeds don't like him. You know, they do see plenty of talent in him. It just wasn't a deal they were going to do in that window. And Louis Sibley at Derby as well, another young prospect that they admire, that they're keeping an eye on. It's not to say that nothing will happen on the incoming front this month, but I think, as we said in a previous podcast, if it does, it'll be a case of Leeds seeing something that they feel is too good to miss. It doesn't feel as if they're in any way desperate to fill any particular position. So they're not going to get sucked into doing something they don't really want to do for the sake of this season. And in many ways, this season doesn't really need that. You know, there isn't any urgency there. There isn't any pressure to make signings. I mean, we ran a survey on The Athletic on New Year's Day. And one of the questions that we were asking about the club is whether or not, you know, supporters felt that there was a need for players to come in this month. And actually more than 50% said no, you know, that they were quite happy with the squad as it is. given the position in the league table. And that's pretty unusual. I mean, it's hard thinking back over 10, 15 years. It's hard to think of a single transfer window or many, certainly, where, you know, the supporters or us in the media have looked at the squad and thought, yeah, it's absolutely fine. You don't need to do anything with this. It's always been the case that you felt that tweaks or improvements were needed to push Leeds over the line or to keep them in contention or to do whatever it was that they were trying to do in one specific season. But a bit like the season itself this time round, it feels pretty calm, you know, around transfers. There doesn't seem to be a huge amount of urgency. And I think, again, as with, you know, the summer window just gone, it'll be the summer window coming when Leeds really try to get active again.
And as you said before, Phil, there's a huge reliance and a huge relationship as well between the first team and the under-23s at Leeds, which perhaps the growing faith in that explains why we now understand how Bielsa works. And we understand that there's this proper symbiosis between the two teams. So you've done a bit on the 23s this week. That's getting published in the next few days.
Yeah, well, people will have seen the story about Derby County and the COVID outbreak down there. And the fact that it looks like Derby will send 23s and under-18s to their FA Cup tie against Chorley, essentially because the first team are isolating, and I think a few under-23s who have moved into their COVID bubble ahead of this game are having to isolate as well. It's made it very, very tricky for them. There's a difference at Leeds to the way that a lot of other Premier League clubs operate and are operating at the moment while coronavirus is going around. And the bubble at Leeds is big. You know, it covers the first team, but it covers the 23s as well. And it means that, as has always been the case under Bielsa, the kind of transition between them and the movement of first team players playing for the 23s and equally 23s coming up into the senior squad is able to continue. And it's a really, really critical part of what Bielsa does and how he tries to manage the first team squad as a whole. And it's interesting when you look through the appearances made by first team players for the 23s at Leeds, your Hernandez's, your Rodrigo's, your Rafinha's. That Friday afternoon when Jack Harrison appeared at left back purely because he was ineligible against Manchester City, his parent club, so wasn't able to play in the Premier League game on the Saturday. You know, rather than just give him the weekend off, he was put in playing out of position in that side at Thorpe Arch on the Friday afternoon. And again, just to keep his fitness ticking over. And when you contrast it with other Premier League sides, particularly those at the top end of the league, you find that your Liverpools and your Manchester Cities and your Chelseas and others, and you'll come back at me with a joke about where Chelsea are on the table, but they don't use the 23s much for the first team. You know, there isn't a huge crossover, certainly on the way down. You know, it isn't the case that players at Liverpool are being given minutes by being played for the development squad. At City, it basically never happens. You know, there just isn't the crossover there. But with Bielsa, it's constant. You know, you've had Costa, who's featured quite a few times. Rafinha's been in there. Rodrigo, £30 million, Spain number nine, you know, has been in with the 23s as well. And it basically, the setup means that coming up to a game like Crawley this weekend, they've got a bubble that allows Bielsa to mix it up. But also, they've got the development and experience there, which I think could let him make changes this weekend. And, you know, without overlooking what happened against Hull back in September, I think could give him reasonable level of confidence that a weekend side can do the business down there.
This kind of difference then between us and a lot of the other Premier League clubs, the use on the 23s, is that purely down to Bielsa?
Well, it's not the case that at Leeds they've never done that. You know, in the past you've had that kind of setup, but it seems, certainly at Premier League level, it seems to have become rarer and rarer. And whereas managers are looking for players to step up from the 23s, they don't seem, you know, in certain cases, to be using the 23s to keep first team players sharp at all. I mean, it's not a secret that under Bielsa that there's been this bridge between the academy and the first team right the way through. And it was helped at the outset by Carlos Corberan, who was 23's coach when Bielsa took over, but kind of inherited that dual role where he carried on with the 23s with Danny Schofield, but also had a foot in the first team camp. So was in Bielsa's dugout on match days, was involved in a lot of the training sessions. It felt like a big homogenous group, really, which to extent is still what it is. Although since Corberan has gone to Huddersfield and Mark Jackson has taken over the 23s, you don't see Jackson in the dugout on first team match days. I don't think the relationship is quite as close, but there are debriefs after every 23s game. You know, Bielsa's very, very specific about which first team players need to play for the 23s, how many minutes they need to get, how they have to be used. it's certainly not an us and them set up at all, and never has been. And I think beyond that, you know, there's the willingness on Bielsa's part to see the under-23s as the padding for his first-team squad. You know, we were talking about Tomori there and whether Tomori could come in. There are other managers and other coaches who would want Tomori in these circumstances, who would say, look, you know, we haven't got Cooper, we haven't got Llorente, we're down on numbers in that area. It would be good to have Tomori just as cover. But Bielsa's attitude, as I was saying, is that he doesn't want to be in a situation where he feels like he's got a massive bottleneck of experienced central defenders, a few of whom he can't offer minutes to. So it always has been the case for him that, you know, if he needs a fallback, it'll be Apple Halmy or it'll be Jack Clark, or it, you know, as things stand now, it'll be Charlie Creswell, Ollie Casey, Leif Davis at centre-back if it needs to be. But in order to do that, you've got to have the 23s training exactly as you want to. You've got to have a lot of them involved with the first team squad. And they have to be as skilled in his tactics as anybody else. And that's the reason essentially why it's been so tight-knit and they've been so closely aligned from the point where he came in, because he doesn't see them as two separate squads. He sees it as a, you know, as one squad that flows into the other and vice versa. And essentially a group of players who, if he sees talent he thinks he can use, then he will.
I guess one advantage to doing things that way is that you tend not, I'm not for one second suggesting that Tomori would be a bad apple, but you can find that you get bad apples in the camp when people are not getting minutes, whereas relying on the 23s means you avoid that problem to a certain extent because they're on an upward trajectory. They're not just there filling space.
It does. And also, if you know, if you're sensible, if you're sensible under 23 and you look at the track record under Bielsa, it's not that academy players have played a huge amount under him. You know, you Shackleton, for example, has been very in and out, and I understand why Shackleton hasn't had more games, but it's always one of those unfortunate things where when you see him play and you see him play well, you wish that there was a way in which he could be used more and could be brought on more. But then you look at the form, and you know, the form of the Premier League and also in the Championship, and there's no argument to be had with Bielsa's selection policy. They're very big these days, and I mean, a lot of clubs are like this now, but at Leeds, certainly big on, you know, looking at players' personalities and characters, and also the thinking about the chemistry of how they're going to fit in. I mean, two of the players I'll be kind of watching with interest to see if they feature this weekend will be Sam Greenwood and Joe Gelhard, two forwards in the under-23s who've scored close to half the goals for them this season. And actually have been very good and close friends for a long time. They crossed paths in the England youth setup and have clearly hit it off. And, you know, it's that sort of thing, I think, that Leeds look for. What's their attitude like? How are they likely to settle? Are they going to fit in? Are they going to understand the processes and Bielsa's policy? Are they going to be happy if they have to wait for a while? I mean, one of the things we were writing about in this piece was the fact that, you know, Bielsa was involved in some of the Zoom calls to sign Gelhard from Wigan. And, you know, Leeds worked really hard on that. They had Leicester, they knew that Leicester were in for him, but it was a deal they wanted to do. So they did the kind of presentations that seem to have become, you know, standard practice now with certainly with first team signings. They were able to say to Gelhard, look, we've seen these goals that you've scored, so we know what you do, but also we can show you with this video footage what it is that we think you need to improve in your game, what it is in your game that will fit into ours, you know, using footage from games that Leeds have been playing under Bielsa. Basically able to give him the full package of how he would be handled and what they would try to work on. And I think more than anything, and again, this worked really well with Robin Koch, to make him feel wanted, you know, to make him feel as if actually Leeds knew just about everything about him. And they weren't just taking a punt on a player who was going at a sort of cut price fee from Wigan. They were going for somebody who they genuinely were keen on, who they genuinely rated and who therefore had that promise about, you know, being involved further down the line. And it would be great actually if Gelhard and or Greenwood was to feature against Crawley, because, you know, we've seen and heard a lot about them in the under-23s, and it would be nice to kind of see them blooded against a proper Football League side.
To go back to the recruitment over summer into the under-23s and also some of the outgoings on loan, do you see the players that are out on loan now coming back and making an impact, or are we now at the stage where we're looking at selling Ryan Edmondson and giving him some minutes so it can improve that? People like Gotts and Bogus, who at some point we had high hopes for, it feels a little bit like they've been pushed down the pecking order slightly.
Yeah, I think that's fair to say. And the attitude, it has kind of changed slightly with Bielsa, but his attitude for a long time was that any of the 23 that he really rated, he wanted to be at Leeds regardless of whether they were playing, because he felt that they would develop more training under him than they would being on loan elsewhere. And you can see the logic behind that, and that if he decides one day to use them, they're going to be more set up for his team on the basis that they've been involved in the training at Thorpe Arch. Edmondson, I'd be surprised if there's a long-term future for him at Leeds. It doesn't appear that that one's going to work out. And Jordan Stevens, again, really not sure whether that's going to happen for him at Leeds. If you take somebody like Alfie McCalmont, for example, over at Oldham, I mean, I wrote in one of the pieces I did earlier this year that Bielsa spent almost 20 hours watching footage of him over the summer, you know, to kind of get his head around his game, to see what he thought of him, to properly establish whether he thought, you know, McCalmont was somebody that he could use. And I think the fact that McCalmont has now gone out to, you know, out on loan, you know, to Oldham, you know, and from a position in the squad at Leeds that isn't, you know, hugely covered at senior, you know, with senior players, midfield can be quite thin on occasions. It suggests to you that he isn't quite in the mix at the moment. But I mean, it's not the case at Leeds that they've suddenly gone to the point where they want their academy to be productive, because it's always been productive. You know, they've always produced high quality youngsters at Leeds. But I think when they recruit now and they bring players in, so Drammy, for example, Cody Drammy from Fulham, and then, you know, players like Greenwood and Gelhard, I think with the amount of scouting that goes on and the amount of background checking that they do into them, there is a genuine hope that actually all of these signings they make are going to be of some actual use further down the line, you know, that all of these players could potentially be good enough. And I think they've tried to go from a scenario where you have a crop in which you fancy one or two might make it to a crop where you think the output could be far higher than that. And I know the 23s have been helped this season by having Hernandez in there and Rodrigo in there and Rafinha as well. But the top of the league, top of the Premier League division under 23s level, and in the main are playing extremely well. So there's clearly a lot of potential there.
Do we expect Gelhart and Greenwood to be the ones that make that next breakthrough? Because we see the other ones who are milling around the edge of the first team, you know, such as Creswell and so on, and Ollie Casey's made a bit of a move in that direction, but no actual inroads yet for those two, and yet they seem to be kind of the brightest hopes.
They're very close to the front of the queue, there's no doubt about that. But it is quite telling, I think, that even though the bench size has increased and the match day squads for Premier League games has increased to 20, and you can now get 9 players on the bench, that we haven't seen Greenwood on there, we haven't seen Gelhard on there. Actually, I mean, we haven't seen any 23s debuts in the Premier League this season, which I think is probably a reflection of the fact that you can't be rash and reckless about that at this level. You've maybe got to be a little bit more considered about it, and you've got to be a bit more certain about how the players are going to cope. We did obviously have Creswell's debut in the League Cup game against Hull, for example. So there are plenty of players who are on the fringes. But, I mean, it would be something to look out for, I think, if Tyler Roberts was to go on loan. If he was to go to Derby or somewhere else, and Bournemouth have been pretty heavily linked with him, if he goes out this month, then it does leave space on the bench for a forward, for a striker, for a player in that mould, so somewhere between a 9 and a 10. And if you're looking at the squad at Thorpe Arch at the moment, it's very difficult, you know, in that particular area, to look beyond Gelhard or Greenwood. They look like the outstanding options.
Crawley Town away, lunchtime on Sunday. It is then, and the question does remain, I guess, what sort of a side will we put out for this one? You would expect several changes, but do we maybe expect quite a number of first-team players in there as well, Phil? What's your take on it?
Well, Bielsa is going to speak tomorrow, which is Friday, for anybody who's listening. So I would imagine he'll give a fairly clear outline of what he's thinking. Although, you know, since naming his team earlier in the season, he's gone into reverse gear on that front and seems to be trying very hard now not to announce his side, not to give too much away on the team news front. I think he seemed to be concerned that he was being seen to be disrespectful by just announcing his 11 there and then before the game. I mean, the noises I hear from Leeds are that he does want to have a crack at the FA Cup this season. I think he was actually really disappointed to go out to Arsenal last year. Leeds played very well down there for 45 minutes and then just ran out of steam a bit in the second half and were picked off. But I think he felt as if that was there to be won. I think he felt that the team he played should have been good enough to have got them through that tie, given how well they dominated the first half. At the same time, I reckon there'll be a kind of split. I think you'll find a balance between resting or leaving out certain players and giving some of the 23s a go. But I don't think he'll want to be too reckless with it. And I don't think he'll want to get beaten down there. But you never quite know with him, because in the main, he's always made changes for cup ties. That has tended to be his way, you know, to mix it up and to use some more of the fringe players. So it'd be a bit of a surprise if he broke from that. But I do kind of feel like I wrote about this after the League Cup defeat to Hull. You know, it's been a long time since Leeds have made inroads in these competitions and gone close to winning a trophy, you know, certainly a knockout trophy. And a long time since they've gone close to the latter stages of it. You know, it was 96 they were last in the League Cup final. It was 87 when they were last in the FA Cup semi-final. And given that a lot of the sides in the Premier League are going to be weighed down, you know, in the second half of the season with European fixtures and everything else, certainly at the top end of the division. And given that Leeds seem to be in, you know, in pretty good fettle and in a strong position themselves when it comes to staying up, it does feel as if they could have a go at this. And it does feel as if, you know, starting with Crawley, they should have a chance of going quite deep into the tournament. So this isn't one to sell down the river, I don't think. I think this is one to take as seriously as is sensible and to certainly try and get through.
Coventry 87, cried at that. Villa 1996, cried at that for different reasons. One was because I was a child, the other one because I was hungover.
It's not worth getting to the latter stages then, that's what you're saying. Let's try and bomb out of this one early.
Let's avoid that, avoid the hurt, yeah.
I must admit, I'm of a similar mind that it's worth having a go at this year, which is, I realise, completely setting us up for a 1-0 defeat here, but I think it'd be nice to see Click get a rest, and probably Ayling in Dallas as well, because I feel like they have played more or less every game for the last 2.5 years now, and it'd be nice to give them a weekend off for a change.
I think as well, if you were thinking of Greenwood or Gelhard, and I know that Gelhard's been playing in a bit more of a withdrawn role as opposed to the nine position that I think Greenwood sees as his strongest position, it would be a chance to give Bamford a bit of a breather, you know, after a really, really good first half of the season. I mean, I can relate to that story about 87. When I watched the highlights of that, you feel as if it's all there for Leeds. You know, you feel as if it's all there for them to win that tie, and then suddenly it's gone. And
he's welling up again here, Phil, just to warn you.
I'm sure he is, yeah. I remember in 88, I was only 7, and I remember Hearts playing Celtic in the Scottish Cup semi-final, and Dave McPherson, I think, scoring the opening goal in that, and looking like Hearts were going to win until Henry Smith, formerly of Leeds, had a nightmare in the last few minutes, and Leeds scored twice right at the end. I think McAvenny got at least one of them, but might have been Andy Walker as well, and just stripped away from you in a way that you didn't think was possible or you didn't think was going to happen. And then suddenly 87 becomes, you know, 2021, and you're still looking to get back to that point. And yeah, so like I say, there's a balance to strike, I think, and a balance to strike, especially because Crawley are in decent position in League Two and in pretty good form at the minute. So it's not going to be straightforward.
I am pleased to report that Leeds United made me cry in 2020 as well, but when I was totally grown up, but for more positive reasons. That was a nicer crying. But yeah, in 87, I couldn't get my head around it. I wasn't a seasoned loser by that point, but there was that one, and then the playoff final later on in the season. So it was a double whammy in one go. It was quite a lot to take on the shoulders of a small child, but you know, here we are. It prepared me for plenty more to follow in the years to come. Yeah, I'd like to see us win a cup, Phil. That'd be nice. I wouldn't mind that at all. I don't care under what circumstances it arrives, because like you say, life gets away from you quickly.
Michael was mentioned there as well, Clegg, you know, the possibility of resting him. The other thing that Bielsa is going to have to take into consideration is the fact that he's lost Phillips to a one-match ban now, which will kick in for Brighton at home, the next Premier League game. So again, the midfield is going to need a bit of reshuffling. And I know it's not Clegg who falls into that position, but he certainly needs all the numbers he can get for that game coming around. So yeah, he's going to have to get it right this weekend.
Do you think he'll play Phillips? I fancy him to play him.
I suspect he will. Yeah, I suspect he will. And as we were saying, you kind of wonder if Phillips might show up in the 23s at some point on the basis that he's going to be missing a game, although I would suspect not. But again, that to me seems like the sort of choice, Phillips at Crawley, that some people might look at it and think that you're risking your best player. But equally, I think him and the team and his strength and quality as a defensive midfielder, it gives you a bit more flexibility and a bit more freedom, I think, to blood a few 23s. I think with Phillips in there and with his intelligence and his ability to kind of pull the strings and run the show, you can go down that route and you can be a bit braver with some of your other selections. So, it again, wouldn't surprise me. And as ever. I mean, there is Strike who can play there. You know, there are alternatives. But there's never an obvious out-and-out replacement for Phillips in that particular role. So interesting to see with that one.
I'm even more intrigued by the idea of Rodrigo playing this game. I wouldn't be entirely surprised to see him starting up front. I don't know why.
Well, as I say, there is the option of taking Bamford out of the team. And you would think that at some stage, Bamford is either going to need a rest or, you know, just a little bit of a break. This would seem like a prime opportunity to do it. And I mean, January is actually quite a busy month. A couple of midweek fixtures coming up, Southampton and Newcastle, and potentially more FA Cup games as well. So it is going to be fairly chocky, although that doesn't seem to influence Bielsa's thinking a great deal. I mean, you can go from really, really tough game against Burnley on a Sunday afternoon to exactly the same lineup smashing West Brom 2 days later. You know, he's always said that he doesn't believe in squad rotation for the sake of it. It's kind of, you know, if somebody's really flagging, that's different, or if somebody's badly out of form, then you're kind of given no choice. But it always seems to me with Bielsa that he would happily go with the same 11 from start to finish in a season if he could count on it playing well consistently and if he could count on it holding up through that number of games. But yeah, Rodrigo at Crawley would be fun. I think Rafinha at Crawley would be fun. I think between the setting and the weather, it would be a bit of an eye-opener for both of them. So yeah, why not?
What sort of a game do we expect? Because do we know much about Crawley as a team? How are they getting on this season? What's their style? Do they have a style?
Good question. They've been competitive in League Two and they've come into a good bit of form at the right time. I mean, it's incredibly tight in that league and it is at the moment really difficult to call. They're in sixth place, but you've got basically the top 10 divided by about 8 points. You've got Carlisle out in front, but there's not much in it. And they're clearly one of the better sides. If they're sensible, they're going to have to be quite industrious. They're going to have to be quite agricultural, I think. I don't think there's any way in which you could try and play, you know, a League Two side could try and play Leeds at their own game. And it's unfortunate for them, a little bit like Marine against Spurs and other fixtures of that nature. It's unfortunate for them that they have no crowd, because it has to be said that these are the games that have quite often got under Leeds' skin. You know, Newport away, Sutton away, they haven't tended to cope well in these games and with crowds like that round about them. It's a different era now. It's a different head coach. It's a different squad with a different level of confidence at Leeds. But I think if you're going to Crawley with the stands packed and the stadium sold out, you just have that little niggle in your head. But as it is, and with the players that Bielsa has to work with, it should be there for Leeds to win this tie.
And do we expect Leeds to win it? I mean, I know I've just talked up the idea of a cup run, but I say that from a position of not expecting us to win this trophy and lift it at the end of the season in the slightest. I've become conditioned to that in that Leeds United way.
We should win it, shouldn't we?
How much are you betting against us?
I might have to have a look at the odds. But I think the whole game earlier in the season was maybe a change too far, wasn't it? As Phil says, with Phillips in there, it gives us a platform to build and for some of the younger players to have a game. And when you actually look back to that whole game, there's a fair few of them have actually left the club now. You've got people like Bogus and Douglas and Gotts played in that. So it's going to be a different team from that one. And I think it'll be about half and half, and I think it will be enough.
I think it should be enough as well. I don't think Bielsa will have gone easy on the players after the game against Hull. I don't think he'll be transmitting the message that they can let this one go cheaply either. I mean, there is, you know, there is a bit of talent in Crawley's side. Somebody I was speaking to earlier in the week was talking about Max Waters, their centre-forward, who's on 16 goals in 18 games this season. So, you know, clearly some threat there and some finishing ability too. But it is funny to think of the way in which Leeds have made a meal of games like this over the years and how often it is that they've managed to embarrass themselves at venues where really they should have gone and won quite comfortably. But without wanting to tempt fate, and I always seem to tempt fate, but I think they'll get the job done this weekend.
You hope so. And their nickname is, well, rather nice this, the Red Devils.
Excellent. Get into them, as the phrase goes.
And of course, we're on the telly for this one, so any shame will be borne out nationally on national TV, which is great.
Yeah, it wasn't a fantastic set of fixtures in round three, I didn't think. Marine against Spurs is great, but obviously, again, lacking a crowd. You suspected that somebody was going to go for Crawley Leeds because Leeds are almost too good not to, in terms of broadcasting figures, not to bother with. And I think as well, because they've been playing as impressively as they have, and they've got Bielsa, there's more of a, there's far more of a plot in a cup shock like this. If Bielsa's side get beaten away at Crawley, than there is, for example, if Christiansen's side get beaten away at Newport County. But yeah, they've had a lot of telly dates in the past of Leeds, and these do tend to attract the cameras. Sutton certainly did, Newport did, even all the way back to Histon on that swimming pool of a pitch. So yeah, there's going to be nowhere to hide if this goes wrong. But I do feel confident about Bielsa getting this one right.
Yeah, I don't have the usual lower league cup tie yips about this one. I mean, I know, Michael, you're the one I'm always looking at for this, because you're the barometer for this sort of stuff. Are you concerned by this?
As Phil mentioned, I'm hoping the empty stands will give it a training game kind of a vibe to it, and they can just turn up like it's any old day at Thorpe Arch.
I mean, you wonder what research Bielsa and his team have done for this. Have they gone for the full dossier, the hours and hours poring over VHS tapes late into the night to understand exactly what Crawley Town are about? Do you suspect he's gone the whole hog on this then, Phil?
Oh, they'll have done huge amounts. Yeah, no. I mean, his first summer, the first pre-season friendly they had was down at Forest Green, and a really nice club, Forest Green. They're dead welcoming and really friendly. And I got down there, there was nobody around. And I went into reception and said, I'm just here. I was at the Evening Post at the time, just here for my media pass, which the girl behind the desk sorted out. And she said, I'll just get somebody down to show you up to the press box, which is great. So I turned around, and the person coming down to get me was Mark Cooper, the club's manager. Just had a quick chat and everything else. And he showed me up the stairs. And we got on to talking about the game and the friendly. And he was saying to me, said, I could hardly believe this, but I got a request from Leeds and from Bielsa by proxy for permission to request three friendlies that we were playing down in the southwest prior to this game. And he said, we were playing non-league sides of no note particularly. And from his point of view, they were really fitness exercises. He wanted to see his team play well, but it was just a case of a warm-up, you know, to get them going. I think they were in League Two at the time, just to get the legs going and to get them into the routine of the summer again. And he said he was absolutely bemused by the request, but he saw, because nobody had ever asked for that before, but he saw no reason to say no. So he said to them, you know, by all means, record the games and everything else. And his understanding was that it was so that Bielsa staff could analyse all three friendlies against Forest Green before they went down to play them in pre-season. And I think if at that point there was any suspicion that it was a one-off or it was just for show or anything else, we've found out pretty comprehensively in the 2.5 years since that it wasn't. And it's that is kind of Bielsa doing what Bielsa does. But if they're going to that amount of effort for a pre-season game at Forest Green, I think you can be sure that they've picked Crawley apart to death.
We record pre-season friendlies against non-league clubs as well. I'm sure Frank Lampard would have argued.
He's still in a job.
John Yems, I wonder if you get the same welcome from John Yems, the manager down there, as you did from Mark Cooper, because he's quite a character, isn't he? He's had stuff to say in the past in post-match interviews, and he's certainly he's one of the game's colourful characters.
Spiky guy who doesn't like what he thinks are obtuse or stupid questions. And I wouldn't have said is necessarily the most kind of mediagenic, if I can use that phrase, manager out there, but actually doing a good job with them. And as I say, has got them in the mix. I mean, I think they, like a lot of clubs, will be desperately hoping that they're going to be able to finish this season and see it out, because the big problems with COVID. I mean, the problems with COVID in the Premier League, but big problems with COVID much further down the pyramid as well. And there's been a lot of testing this week to make sure that that your clubs like Crawley are all clear to play. And as it stands, that game certainly going ahead, unless there's any sort of major developments in the next 48 hours. But it seems like both squads are in good shape for it. But yeah, I mean, he seems to know his own mind, this Crawley's manager. And I think it'd be quite a... I don't know whether it'll be a meeting of minds between him and Bielsa, but again, something interesting to watch the two of them on the touchline.
Some other spiky characters as well related to Crawley Town. I've been poring through the pages of the Crawley and Hawley Observer, news you can trust since 1881, no less. And on there is a page of five things that Leeds United and Crawley Town have in common. Top one, Steve Evans. Second one, Harry Kewell.
Yeah. Two of Leeds' favourite sons. Yeah, Evans was always going to come top of that. But actually, I mean, Kewell made such a poor impact down there that I'd totally forgotten he was even there.
They also go for the 2007 administration, apparently something we both share, which is great. Getting down further down.
It's all positive, isn't it?
Further down the list, I think this is probably the highlight of it. Sanchez Watt, that's it.
Yeah, remember him?
Dominic Polion, and that is your lot.
Wow, so much history.
Predictions then for how this one will go. Come on then, neck on the block time.
A 2-0.
Away win. I don't think necessarily highly spectacular, but I think away win and by a couple of goals.
Yeah, I fancy similar. We've got this one. Have we got this one, Michael? We've got it.
Yep. I'll say it quickly so it doesn't count.
And one to watch, please, Phil, then. A battle person issue thing that we should be keeping our eyes on at the People's Pension Stadium.
I knew it was called that. If you're looking at Crawley, look for Waters up front because that's where the goals are coming from. But if Greenwood or Gelhardt or potentially both, but if one or other play, then I'll be very, very interested to see how they do because we've been hearing a lot about them in dispatches from Thorpe Arch and particularly Greenwood recently. So this could be the weekend for them and if it is, well worth a look.
And of course, not to mention the pundits because everybody loves a TV pundit.
Well, I heard Ag Bonnahor earlier this week talking about how if Leeds tightened up at the back, they could be a top four side. And it made me think about how absolutely ludicrous it is that a promoted side are being spoken about in terms of what they could do to qualify for the Champions League. I'd be genuinely interested to know the last time anybody looked at a side coming up from the Championship and started to talk about them in those terms. But I suppose you would call it a feather in Bielsa's cap, wouldn't you?
It feels like they've had to change the argument in recent weeks because it was that the narrative was that Leeds are going to get dragged into a relegation battle if they don't improve. And then we got some big wins and they've said, oh, should really be doing better than this, shouldn't they?
Yeah, and not to mention, that's Gabby Agbonlahor of Bielsa is a myth fame. I mean, come on, can't we do better than this? If you're going to troll us, at least do it well.
They aren't half applying some unrealistic standards to Bielsa and Leeds. I mean, whatever anybody says, in my view, this is not a top four team. I mean, it seems totally unrealistic to think of Leeds in those terms at this stage. I think they're going to finish somewhere between 8th and 14th. I think the table's so fluid that it could be as wide as that. But the idea that they are good enough to go for top four at this stage or should even be thinking about top four at this stage just seems like fantasy football to me and is about as baffling as anything else that's been said.
Well, I wait with bated breath to find out what brilliant opinion Gabby Agbonlahor has pivoted towards having about Leeds United next week, because I'm sure it will change again.
They should have already won the FA Cup.
Right, brilliant. Right, well, fingers crossed that the game goes swimmingly at the People's Pension Stadium on Sunday. If you want to catch up with all the stuff Phil's been writing about, including that upcoming under-23s piece that we were talking about today, you can subscribe to The Athletic at theathletic.com/LeedsPod to pick up the latest offer. It's $3.99 a month at the minute. Nice discount for you for the new year. theathletic.com/LeedsPod to sign up. We'll speak to you next week. Bye-bye.
The Phil Hayes Show.